Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, I hope you can hear me. This is Linda. I am right from the left coast. I am in Oceanside. It's 81 degrees and absolutely gorgeous. I hope you can hear me. If you can, please type into the chat room. I won't be able to hear callers very well unless they really scream and shout because Blog Talk Radio is screwing up again. So that's what we're dealing with. I want to give a shout out to Rod and Lonnie for being in the chat room. Hopefully others will join. I can't even get onto the board as far as music goes because it's a mess. No sound for Rod. I don't know what's happening. So Lonnie, please let me know if you can hear me. I also want to give a shout out to Bill Strong because he wasn't feeling well yesterday and I'm worried about his meds and all these things. So we have to pray for him. I will start with, Lonnie, please let me know if you can hear me. And I don't know what's happening, but they have got this thing so messed up that I can't even get into my audio stuff. There's like no way to, you can't scroll down, so I can't get to anything on that, so I can't play those musics. I will do a little bit of scripture, and we will go into the show, and I will backtrack and find out what's going on, and hopefully if anyone calls in, then I will be able to hear them. So, yeah, I don't understand what's happening, Rod. I don't know if you can refresh or get it in another way or go to the email I sent you and just say where it says listen now. Lonnie, I don't know if you can hear me, but please let me know. So, he's logged out. Apparently no one can hear me, so I will just go forth and we will continue. I have an hour and 27 minutes. Blog Talk Radio is giving me a headache right now. I cannot go into the soundboard, so welcome Yola and Nick. So hopefully if you guys can hear me, please let me know if you can hear me. So, because I don't know. Yay, thanks Lonnie. I'm going to go with Proverbs 2nd chapter verse 3. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For the length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. So shall thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. And lean not unto thine own understanding. Very important. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord, and depart from evil. So I just wanted to make sure that we understood these lessons, and hopefully others can get in. Like I said, Blog Talk's a mess. If anyone calls in, I probably won't be able to hear them unless they shout because I'm going through a sound problem with them, so it will be a problem. I'm going to try to backtrack a little bit to give you an update on what's going on in Oceanside, what's going on in the state of California, some of the things that Rod had sent to me and I had sent back to him, and that'll be on my other readings today. There was a meeting last night that I attended, which is a candidate forum. There were four candidates that actually showed up, and this is city council. We've been fighting. This is the worst killer time. I actually did some phone banking today to help Dana and Chuck get elected to get these yahoos out of there. They've been there way too long, and they don't understand what we're saying. They don't care. So I'm also trying to promote Thomas Krause, who is going up against Rocky Chavez, who is a complete rhino. And, oh, hi, Yo. Hope she can hear us, too. Love you, Nick and Yo. Rocky Chavez was not my choice. I actually phone banked 2 years ago against him for Sherry Hodges. She didn't stand a chance. People didn't understand what was going on. Of course, in California, that's not surprising. People just don't get it. I'm up against this every single day. We had a great almost two-hour meeting yesterday where the candidates got to answer questions. I was very disappointed that they did not read my entire question because they obviously didn't care, didn't want to address it, or didn't understand it. My question to the candidates, and they all got a chance to respond, what they did was they took all the traffic questions and the road improvement questions and lumped them all together in one question, and I was really ticked off about it. And this was the League of Women Voters, whom I think lean far to the left. And my question was, because we have all this crap going on in Oceanside with Agenda 21 and the roads the roundabouts and all this nonsense and sustainable development, and it's marching towards pure communism because that's what this global climate change and Agenda 21 is all about. It always has been and it always will be. So, no, I'm not giving up. Anyway, so the gist of my question was, what are you going to do to stop the roundabout traffic calming, those roundabouts and the traffic calming on Coast Highway, to ensure personal liberty and private property rights? And that was my question. They did not read that question. They lumped them all together and talked about traffic calming. I was very upset, but that's the way it goes in Libtard, California. So I'm going to go back to, I'm going to get to everything that's in my Gmail, which has got a whole bunch of stuff, and some stuff that Rod and I talked about earlier about the separation of church and state, which actually, about 5 minutes before he sent me that email today, was talked about on Mike Slater's show, and it happened in Escondido at another meeting simultaneous to ours in another part of the city, and some idiot asked their candidates a question calling about these the constitutional provision of the separation of church and state, and what were you going to do to, you know, to deal with that. And I'm telling you guys, if I had been in that room, Armageddon would have come. I would have just gone freaking ballistic. So it's a good thing I was not there. But anyway, I want to go to, there's a really cool article or portion of this book. I'm still reading Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. I'm going to take a drink of water so I don't totally croak out here. And call up Blog Talk Radio, and I think I can later after the show, and find out what they've done to my site and fix this mess. I've got, like, there's probably 30 or 40 song titles on the board, but now they've changed the board, so I have no way of scrolling down. There's no scroll thing at all. It's just amazing to me. I don't understand it. And if anyone calls in today, which I hope they do later on, there's not very much chance that I can hear what they're saying. People out in the audience can hear them, but I will have to strain if they don't shout. So it's going to be pretty crazy. So this particular piece is really interesting on division of labor and other things that have been happening. Okay, well, apparently that happened to Lonnie yesterday. I can't see it. I cannot find it anywhere. When, if I put the arrow, it's not working. So it's not there on my screen at all. So it's got to be my computer not being helped by BTR. Let me just find this deal because I've been reading from Adam Smith. It's really good, this book. I'm not kidding. You'd think it would be very droll, but it's not. This is on the wages of labor and how this happens. Yeah, I know, BTR just, oh God, I'm going to have to get a hold of these guys and make them fix it. Anyway, it talks about, from the book, the price of labor, it must be observed, cannot be ascertained very accurately anywhere, different prices being often paid at the same place and for the same sort of labor, not only according to the different abilities of the workmen, but according to the easiness or hardness of the masters. This is talking about Old England and Old Scotland, so you can understand that there was definitely a class system there going on. Where wages are not regulated by law, all that we can pretend to determine is what are the most usual. And experience seems to show that law can never regulate them properly, though it has often pretended to do so, which also encompasses price fixing and minimum wage laws, etc., which are completely unconstitutional in this country, and the antithesis of a free market, which we've talked about many times. We're going to go into the news of the day and all the stuff that's on. I mean, there's so much stuff on my Gmail. It's like, wow. So we'll get into that in a minute. But I wanted to read these because I promised last week that I would get into it. And this is from David Barton's Original Intent. And this is talking about some of our history and the founding and everything else. And this is dealing with Patrick Henry, because Ron and I had talked about it. And I said, I have that speech. I thought I'll get into it. And then after that one, I'll get into the other speech by John Hancock in 1775, which is also amazing. These are short, so that we'll get through it and we'll enjoy. I want to read what Rod says. Too many people believe what the evil ones say instead of reading for themselves. The First Amendment has five words. Congress shall make, well, so everything listed after that are immune from any law obligations. And then he's not finished. So we'll get to that. Well, they don't understand that the reasoning behind it says law exists where no law exists before, made by federal judges. Well, the Supreme Court has been overstepping its bounds for a very long time, and they've been very liberal for many decades. So that's another story. We'd have to do another 2-hour show on that. But the whole idea of using the word religion instead of worship was to restrict our government at any time to tell you where, when, what, how, and why to pray, and that's why, or to worship, and so that's why they used the word religion, which is a broad brush, which is good, and these people were very wise in using that word, and this First Amendment restricts the government, not you and me, and for these stupid people's information that at the convention of the Constitution back in the day in Philadelphia, those men prayed for 2 hours, and that there is no separation of church and state, except that the stupid state or the all-being state cannot tell you what to do or where to do it. That's why they use the word religion. So anyone wants to make that argument with me will be facing my shotgun shortly. I'm kidding, but sometimes I feel like wielding it or even using it as a baseball bat. Here is the actual speech by Patrick Henry, and it says in the book, although many loyalist voices urged calm and absolute submission, others, like Patrick Henry, cried for action. In his fiery speech before the Virginia House on March 23rd, 1775, Henry proclaimed, shall we try argument? Sir, we have been trying that for the last 10 years. Our petitions have been slighted. Our remonstrances, complaints, in parentheses, have produced additional violence and insult. Our supplications have been disregarded, and we have been spurned with contempt from the foot of the throne. An appeal to arms and to the God of hosts is all that is left us. Tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be next week or next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed and when a British guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Sir, we are not weak if we make a proper use of those means which the God of nature hath placed in our power. 3 millions of people armed in the holy cause of liberty and in such a country as that which we possess are invincible by any force which our enemy can send against us. Besides, sir, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations and who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Gentlemen may cry peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that the gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. Anyway, this is from Patrick Henry in 1775, prior to the actual writing and signing of the Declaration. Thank you for joining us, Mikey B. Glad to have you here. I'm going to go through this. If anyone calls in, I don't know if you can call in, Mike, but Blog Talk Radio is driving me absolutely nuts. I don't even know if I can hear people because the sound was so low when they give the chimes for the sound here in the studio. Anyway, so back to John Hancock's speech, and it's short, and I'll get to that right here. On April 15th, 1775, John Hancock, witnessing the growing and ominous storm clouds of full-scale war, called Massachusetts to a day of prayer and fasting, explaining that, quoting, in circumstances dark as these, it becomes as men and Christians to reflect that whilst every prudent measure should be taken to ward off the impending judgments, all confidence must be withheld from the means we use and reposed only on that God who rules in the armies of heaven, and without whose blessing the best human counsels are but foolishness and all created power vanity. It is the happiness of his church that when the powers of earth and hell combined against it, then the throne of grace is one of the easiest access, and its appeal thither is graciously invited by that Father of mercies who has assured it that when his children ask bread, he will not give them a stone. That it be, and hereby is, recommended to the good people of this colony as a day of public humiliation, fasting, and prayer to confess the sins, to implore the forgiveness of all our transgressions, and especially that the union of the American colonies in defense of their rights, for which hitherto we desire to thank Almighty God, may be preserved and confirmed, and that America may soon behold a gracious interposition of heaven. So these are things that that we need to start going back and reading. In fact, I wish that Ron was here, because I need to give him an email and ask him to give me all the links on Hamilton and his predilections to mercantilism, so I have a debate going on in Facebook, and so these people don't understand history, and they claim that I don't either. So anyway, I don't know if Mike still is experiencing the same stuff on BTR. They're giving me a real headache today. I can't even scroll down on my song choices. So they've got this chat room all messed up. So anyway, I want to go back to, again, 646-378-0321. If anyone wants to call in and test this mess. Yeah, you'll find out tomorrow it's a mess, I'm telling you. I'm going to go out of the chat room for a second and try to find these things that are really, really amazing. This is one that I got from Rod, and I had done a few posts on this project or this article that was sent to me. And I had seen this on Facebook, and it was regarding Corrie Ten Boom from The Hiding Place in the Holocaust. This book apparently was labeled too Christian for, so the school library dumps the Holocaust survivor books. So I had gone through and made a remark. So I'm glad they have a lawyer on this. Pacific Justice Institute is warning a charter school, this is a charter school in Southern California, no surprise, that it is violating the First Amendment by removing library books based on their perceived Christian content. A parent of students enrolled at Springs Charter Schools recently was shocked. I'm going to go to the next page and bring this up. Forgive the little, okay, so They were shocked to see some of the books being targeted for removal. Sounds like book burning to me, including the well-known account of Holocaust survivor Corrie Ten Boom, The Hiding Place. The parent contacted Pacific Justice Institute after library personnel explained to her that they had been directed to remove Christian books. They're removing Christian books. Books by Christian authors and books from Christian publishers. This attorney from PGI, Michael Pfeffer, sent the school a cease and desist letter on August 22nd, citing long-established Supreme Court precedent that strongly disapproves of school libraries removing books based on opposition to their content or message. So let me go back to, real quickly, to my response to Rod. So I wrote back to him and said, they are believing the big lie of separation of church and state. There are no such words inside the Constitution nor in the Declaration of Independence. Some progressive rat bastard, obviously some time ago, found that phrase in the 1802 letter from Jefferson to the Danbury priests. They have lied about it to the idiotic public ever since. The public does not read, they do not research, they do not think for themselves. That is why we are in the mess we are in. If it were up to me, I would ask the rats in this school, what shall we do next? Burn the books like Hitler did? These stupid, godless schmucks need to be stopped. And that was my response to these people. There's another, let me see if I can get back. I'm going back to studio to see. Rod says they use that excuse to change history so they can say it never happened. Oh, of course. Well, yeah, Eisenhower warned about that when he was on the battlefield and says, please take pictures because some SOB is going to say it never happened. I know. I know my history. But anyway, again, if anyone wants to call in, please do so while I'm ranting and check my sound levels because I don't know. Hopefully they don't have to shout for me to hear them. This is kind of interesting because it's talking about 6 Supreme Court cases this term. So there's obviously some things that are going to be brought up, and they could be very devastating if we have the wrong people, which we do, voting on them. This number one is Illinois versus United States. Aspiring rapper Anthony Tone Dougie Ellenis was convicted of making criminal threats after posting rap lyrics on Facebook about killing his estranged wife. Did the government have to prove Tone Dougie intended to actually threaten his wife, or is it enough to show that a reasonable person would have viewed those fake Facebook posts as true threats? The second one, Department of Transportation versus Association of American Railroads. Oh, this is going to get interesting. Can Congress delegate regulatory authority to a private entity? This case involves a 2008 law that authorized Amtrak to co-author regulations governing the railroad industry. I don't think so. Amtrak is a unique creature created by an act of Congress, but run as a for-profit corporation. The court will decide whether this delegation of regulatory authority was proper. Another case, Hine versus North Carolina, ignorance of the law is no excuse, or so the saying goes. Consistent with the Fourth Amendment, a police officer may ask or may make a traffic stop if he has reasonable suspicion a law is being violated. But what happens if the officer makes a mistake about what the law requires? So these are all questions. There's a couple more. Holt versus Hobbs. Can a state prison prohibit inmates from having beards? An inmate serving a life sentence in Arkansas argues he must maintain a beard to comply with his faith, and notes that 39 other states and the District of Columbia allow inmates to grow beards varying lengths. So the Supreme Court will decide whether the federal religious land use and institutionalized persons act protects this exercise of religion. Can you stand it? That should be thrown out. This is nuts. Yeah, they have the right to grow beards. Maryland State Controller of the Treasury versus Wynn. In Maryland, residents pay not only a state income tax, but also a county income tax. Sounds like California. We're taxed when we breathe. This case involves Maryland residents who are trying to avoid paying duplicative taxes for income earned out of state and already taxed by other states, which makes sense to me. But the Supreme Court previously ruled states can tax their residents seemingly without limits. Of course they can. We live in a totalitarian government. Next one, the last one, Yates versus the United States. does the federal white-collar criminal law known as Sarbanes-Oxley cover shredding fish? In this case, a fish and wildlife officer used a citation to John Yates for catching undersized red grouper in the Gulf of Mexico. Yates was instructed to return to port where the grouper were to be seized, but when he arrived, the officer counted fewer undersized fish and suspected Yates threw them overboard. Yates was convicted under Sarbanes-Oxley for destroying tangible objects, good God, with the intent to obstruct an investigation. You see how it's run amok? So that was another interesting one that I came across today. So if again, if anyone wants to try to call in and see if I can hear them, 646-378-0321. I'm not sure what the – I am not following the chat right now because I'm in another page, so I'm going to go next to the next one. There's so much stuff going on. So we have – there were several articles. Let's see. Balance Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Okay, so I have James Madison. I also have – I think this – okay, this is Sheriff Joe Arpaio, one of my favorite ones from Arizona. That's Rod's home state. And he talks about – because Joe Arpaio says, our country is under attack and Barack Obama is the aggressor. Known as America's sheriff, Joe Arpaio took a shot at Barack Obama at the end of August over his criminal negligence when it comes to the immigration invasion taking place on America's southern border. In an email, Joe – declared, our country is under attack and Barack Obama is the aggressor. That's right, our own president has overseen the release of thousands of illegal immigrants, hundreds of whom are convicted criminals, and he has done that, even felons, which are flooding into America. Every day you read the newspaper or turn on the news, there is something tragic happening, something Obama says is beyond our control. But I must tell you, the state of the U.S., Mexican border is not beyond our control. In fact, it's one of the key places where the safety of our nation starts. And I am working around the clock to take criminals off the streets. Will you support my reelection campaign while he's doing donate? Every action Obama has taken since the border crisis began has led to an increase in the flood of men, women, and children and criminals, the icing on the cake. Obama's solution is holding events at the White House honoring young adults who come to this country illegally. He is rewarding criminals. We are arresting them just to have the Obama administration release them the next day. Over the past 7 months, I have compiled the statistics of over 3,000 inmates in my jail for various crimes that are here illegally. Over 36% of these illegals come back many times after they are turned over to the federal government for deportation. But if they're coming back at such an alarming rate, either our border is so porous or the federal government is releasing them out the back door. Either way is unacceptable. I have written to every month to Secretary of Department of Homeland Security about this, and just last week I sent a letter to the Inspector General's office asking for an investigation. You know what I got back? Nothing. Nada. Zilch. Even the mainstream media is completely ignoring this problem. Well, that's not surprising. If we lose control over our own borders and the rule of law no longer matters in the courts, then I fear our great American experiment will draw to a close. Well, Joe, I think it already has. In Arizona alone, more than 1,000 illegal immigrants are being dropped off at bus stations in Phoenix and Tucson alone. We now have U.S. Border Patrol agents moving illegal immigrants from one city to another in our United States. It's a bad situation, but I refuse to sit back and watch it get worse. That is why I urgently need your most generous support. We must stand together in unison against Obama's pro-amnesty regime. Obama golfs on vacation while the borders flood, just like Nero fiddled while Rome burned. This isn't the first time that Arpaio has said some straightforward things about Obama. In 2012, Sheriff Joe said that Obama's birth certificate was a national security issue. Not that anything's going to ever come of that. Arpaio has been one who has sought to enforce the law with regard to illegal aliens for years. When Arizona's SB 1070 came up, Arpaio supported it but declared, I will continue to arrest illegal aliens that violate the state laws of this state, so nothing will change. SB 1070 was only partially upheld by the Supreme Court, but that hasn't stopped Arpaio from doing his job. Obama has done all of what Arpaio has said. He has flagrantly disregarded his oath, ignored the law, and in the process mocked the law and has committed treason against the American people. But it isn't just Obama's fault. A Republican-led House and a Democrat-led Senate have stood by and let him do it without one article of impeachment being filed. They are just as complicit in the matter as Barack Obama. What is it going to take to rattle the cages of Washington establishment? Well, I know the answer to that. Probably Rev Part 2. So that's that one. I just wanted to go back to the studio to see if anyone's called in. Yeah. So, again, there's a guest, 2033. I'm hoping it's some people who will call in. Anyone that wants to call and get in on this conversation is so welcome to do so. 646-378-0321, unless, Mikey, you can't call in because you're working or something. So let me know in the chat room. I will continue to go through what's going on in my state because it's a mess. Let's see. There's another one here. Okay, well, that's the Muslim refugees. There's articles everywhere. Let's see if I can get... Okay, here it is. Confirmation of oppose Obama's plan to bypass Senate with new climate accord. Oh, boy, this ought to be good. So it says, the UN is a body of dictators who have no authority over our country, our laws, and our constitution. The Obama administration intends to bypass the requirement for a two-thirds vote in the Senate for ratification of a treaty by using reflexive law to force acceptance of unproven claims about global warming. An article in the August 26th New York Times carried the revealing headline, Obama Pursuing Climate Accord in Lieu of Treaty. Please read Reflexive Law, How Sustainable Development Has Conned Us All at this website, to underscore how the Obama administration is planning to use reflexive law to implement a new international climate accord without having to submit it to the Senate for ratification. Please let me know that you will not allow this completely unconstitutional plan to proceed. Agenda 21 is a UN-born evil lie. I am not in favor of anyone or any entity controlling me with an iron fist. That was my response. This garbage from the UN Agenda 21, global warming, climate change at all, is not only a huge lie, it is a dire threat to freedom, our founding, and everything that made America great. So that's how I had responded to that. There's a lot going on with that. It's like, oh my gosh. There's another one. It was, let's see which one it was. There was several ones. This was the Obama's scheme to kill America's freedom, and a lot of these made a lot of sense, so I wanted to make sure we got through these. This is a quote from William Pitt to the House of Commons, November 18, 1783. Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. And that's what they're talking about. Many of these items. If you are President Obama and you have a Marxist political agenda to fundamentally change the country into a collective dictatorship, what can you do to create feelings of indebtedness to the government? What if you wish to kill the spirit of the American Revolution, that every person should be free to pursue happiness in his or her own way, free of government tyranny? How do you go about unmaking the Constitution? Well, promises, promises. Well, President Obama started by promising that under Obamacare, you could keep $2,500 more of your income due to low cost lowering efficiencies. Also, you could keep your doctor. Additionally, you could keep your health plan. Well, we know that's a biggie lie. And then President Obama, who swore to the American people that Obamacare was not a tax and pledged that never to claim that it was one, sent his legal eagles to the Supreme Court to argue that Obamacare was legal under the government's taxing authority, and he won. Taxes, taxes everywhere. The 21 taxes collected by Obamacare, from the medical device tax to the penalty tax assessed on those unable to pay premiums, are all destructive to the ability of Americans to have any control over their household management or retirement planning. It has already become apparent that healthcare premiums have increased dramatically and will possibly double again next year. Many Americans who could afford their premiums pre-Obamacare are now unable to afford them. Many are incentivized to quit work in order to qualify for subsidies. Oh, great plan. The economy will contract as a result, further impoverishing of the country and rendering the people less financially free and more dependent upon government. Then the next headline is Communist Lies. Throughout history, communists have lied to create the conditions for their success. Obama knows that burdens created by Obamacare will rob Americans of their financial freedom. Calls on the government for relief will increase, and the more people rely on government for help, the less they will feel free to dissent when it comes to the perpetration of government injustices. It becomes harder for people to insist on their civil rights when they fear that angering the government might lose them their little benefits. A scary conversation. Once the government controls the health care of an entire people, the government has power to decide what treatment options exist for any given individual. Imagine what you would do if the police, upon your request, say they produce a search warrant, responded by having the following scary conversation with you. Quote, you don't really want to demand a warrant, do you? We just happen to know from your doctor that you need medical procedure and you are also on prescribed medication. If you don't want us to search your home, then what if the government decides it does not want you to have your procedure or get your meds renewed? You insist on your rights, and we insist on canceling care. How about that one? Checkmate. When the government is in charge of whether or not Americans have access to life-enhancing or life-saving care, constitutional rights are converted into privileges. The government can then cancel. The government does not need to repeal the Constitution. It needs only to strike fear into the hearts of those who might insist on their constitutional rights. If everyone is too cowed to invoke these rights, then the Constitution is rendered less than useless and more than dead. America ceases to be free. Checkmate, communism triumphs at last. And do not imagine it will stop at healthcare. The need for government hospitals to regulate shipping costs will mean taking over trucking and rail. That will dictate price controls on fuel. Eventually, piece by piece, our free market is lost. And without a free marketplace where prices rise to protect supply or fall to facilitate purchasing, huge shortages and surpluses will appear. Life will become, for Americans, much the same as it was for Soviet citizens under the Marxist regime that ultimately failed there. But it only failed after inflicting three or four generations of economic slavery on an entire nation of people. And that's true. Stalin did accomplish that. He was a schmuck. Obama the Marxist. Obama established his Marxist credentials while in college, and on January 11, 1996, Obama joined the New Party, a Marxist political party, and he has been a member and organizer for its agenda ever since. Improperly vetted by a sycophantic liberal media, Obama was allowed to run for high office in a low-information environment during two entire presidential election cycles. It was not widely reported how close his ties were to the terrorist Berlaires or the Marxist George Soros. The result has been that Americans have an elite secret society of a government which, like the Soviet Politburo, refuses to allow itself to be investigated or to comply with any subpoenas. Witness how difficult it has been for the House of Representatives to obtain compliance with its congressional subpoenas, or even something as simple as a Freedom of Information Act request. God save our free republic, which probably is already gone. By shrinking the economy and significantly reducing financial freedom through overtaxation and the creation of regulatory and legal uncertainty, Obama has chosen to prosecute an agenda of economic slavery into the state that will crush freedom and demoralize Americans. Let us hope that Americans can react to the Obama threat in effective ways and in time to save their free republic and see their constitution restored. Let us further hope that the leadership succeeding the Obama administration will have America's best interests at heart. Well, I can only hope. And finally, let us pray together as Americans for the return of our country to its former status as the land of opportunity and freedom. That I pray for every single day, believe me. So I'm going to go right back to the studio again. If anyone would like to call in, please do so. I have 50 whole minutes left. I'm going to continue going through the stuff's going on in my county and other places. Let's see. Find this. Okay, here's a good one. This one's from my friend in north up north in Orange County. It says, this is the cap and trade scheme, and it's probably dealing with Santa Monica and our area. So if I can find, I hope this is not a webinar. Anyway, on September 9th, I attended the seminar called Making Cap and Trade Work, a feedback session on the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Program, which is all Agenda 21. It was held by a group called the Kennedy Commission. It stated its stated mission, working for systemic change resulting in the production of affordable homes in Orange County's extreme low-income families. This is all Agenda 21, man. This is all their stuff. The event's purpose was to show the attendees how funds collected through AB 32, which is cap and trade in California, can be used to build low-income housing. This is so evil. Cap and trade is the Global Warming Solutions Act 2006, authored by Fabian Nunez and signed by Governor Steroid Strudel. Its mission is to develop regulations and market mechanisms to reduce California's greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by the year 2020. For your information, folks, 95% of greenhouse or gas emissions are water vapor. These people have been lying since day one. Emissions trading, or cap and trade, is a market-based approach to use to control pollution by providing economic incentives for achieving reductions in the emissions of pollutants. CO2 is not a pollutant, neither is water vapor. These guys are lying. A central authority using a governmental body sets a limit or cap on the amount of a pollutant that may be emitted, which is extremely stupid. So I guess I have to stop breathing with these idiots. The limit or cap is allocated or sold to firms in the form of emissions permits, which represent the right to emit or discharge. Are you kidding me? Listen to this language. The right to emit or discharge a specific volume of that specified pollutant. Firms are required to hold a number of permits or allowances or carbon credits equivalent to their emissions. I can't even believe what I'm reading. The total number of permits cannot exceed the cap, limiting the total emissions to that level. Firms that need to increase their volume of emissions must buy permits from those who require fewer permits. Oh, my God. All you need to know about cap and trade is that Ken Lay, the disgraced former CEO of Enron, refined the scheme. Cap and trade is a scam that gives the government another way to steal from the public in the form of a carbon tax levied on businesses that surely trickles down to the consumer, hugely, especially with energy. After 1 hour in the seminar, I understood this clearly. Under the guise of the failed theory of global warming, AB 32 was created to permanently change the demographics of California. You think? It works like this. The state of CA steals billions from industry via AB 32 by mandate. 20% of the proceeds, $150 million in 2014, double that in 2015, have to be used for affordable housing, which is all part of Agenda 21, guys. A California EPA decides what constitutes a disadvantaged community. Oh, here we go. And directs money for low-income housing to be built there. This Cal EPA has a mapping tool that it uses to identify these disadvantaged areas. Oh, I'll bet they've got a map. I looked at one such area in Riverside, and it was clearly in a Republican-leaning district. Oh, surprise, surprise. The low-income housing is built. All multifamily, high-density, sustainable development units, injecting thousands of new voters into a district. The vast majority of them dependable and taxpayer-subsidized Democratic Party voters, and thus changing a red or purple district into solid blue. Through a combination of discrimination, lawsuits, and regulations, regionalists hope to force the urban poor into the suburbs. Oh, how nice of them. Just as they hope to use urban growth boundaries. Oh, yeah, I'll bet they do. Automobile fees and regulations to force, listen to that word, force suburbanites to back into the cities. Total economic integration would mean that suburbs, as we know them, would cease to exist. In effect, economic integration would replace the principle that Americans live where they can afford to buy housing with de facto government residential mandates. Good God. Regionalism, which I hate, one name for a movement that travels under many names, including metropolitanism, regional equity, smart growth, and anti-sprawl. Bluntly stated, the goal of regionalism is to abolish the suburbs, ideally by having cities annex surrounding suburban municipalities. Failing that, regionalists focus on a three-pronged strategy to effectively render suburbanized control of their own municipalities meaningless. Redistributing suburban wealth throughout a metropolitan region through tax-based sharing. Oh my God, if that's not Marxism, I don't know what it is. Two, urban growth boundaries to block the development of rural areas, of course, thereby forcing would-be suburbanized back towards the cities. And three, economic integration, that is forced zoning changes and low-income housing mandates designed to force inner-city residents into the suburbs. Regionalists also back various schemes to break down school district boundaries within a given metropolitan region, thereby redistributing suburban school funding to the cities. Oh, how clever of them. The idea is to take the suburbs, now the swing constituency in national elections, and divide them against themselves. Obama wants to create a political alliance between cities and older inner-ring suburbs, in effect urging these constituencies to gang up on the bulk of the suburbs in state legislatures to impose regional tax-sharing plans on a reluctant middle class. How sweet. So Obama's long-term goal is to build a new and permanent Democratic majority on the promise of regional income redistribution. Stanley Kurtz, Spreading the Wealth, How Obama is Robbing the Suburbs to Pay for the Cities. I guess that's why the Kennedy Commission means by systematic change. It sure sounds a lot like fundamentally changing America, and definitely makes me think about how the Obama and Brown administration's policies are pushing more people into government dependence. I will be investigating this further to write a more detailed piece. Stay tuned. So that's the end of that article, and I just want to go back to the chat room. I just thought you guys would be interested in this. Anyone who wants to call in and weigh in on this stuff, please call 646-378-0321. We still have 42 minutes left, unless you want me to keep reading. But anyway, like I said, there was a lot of good stuff in Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations and things going on in my own community. The cap and trade here in California, the stuff going on steroids with Agenda 21 in California is just mind-boggling. It goes on every single day. I have to fight this stuff. I had a good conversation with my local city council member who actually understands, and I've sent him many articles and things on Agenda 21 and what they're doing and how this affects everybody. And he gets it. He wants me to send more because he's very open to understanding what they're doing. And he gets the theory behind it. I don't know if he's connected it to the communist roots, but I can certainly do that for him. Again, I don't know if Mikey can call in, but I would love to have him do so. Good night, Rod. Hope you have a great night. I may have to cut the show short since people are not calling. I don't know why, but I can't get Ron. I guess he's really, really busy. Let's see the next one. Refugees, freedom. Okay, here's another little quickie. This was Obama illegal get. Okay, that was simplified standard. Okay, if I can get to this one, there's a whole bunch of good stuff in here, and I can't remember. I didn't star the right pieces. It says Agenda 21 simplified the standardization of Common Core. There's so much going on with that stuff. Hanging in the hallways of Northeastern State University's Broken Arrow, Oklahoma campus are signs that state the following: developing global citizens for the 21st century and a sustainable future. I hate this communist stuff. It is hard to believe because Oklahoma is said to be one of the most conservative states in the Union. However, the state's universities are overflowing with hardcore leftists who are attempting to change the worldview of the younger generations. I specifically remember that very last day of my class, last class right before graduation. We watched a video that was essentially describing the end game goals of UN Agenda 21 and their plans to use wealth of the United States to redistribute to third world countries. The video was complete with blaming capitalism and gun owners, of course, for all of the world's problems, and it was very convincing in its argument that America owed the world a climate debt because of our gritty industrial society. Yeah, go try to watch your TV without your coal and your oil, you dumb dingbats. I found this very interesting because this was around the same time that the Common Core was beginning to appear in the educational arena. The point is that Common Core and education in general are vehicles through which UN's Agenda 21 will secure its own future. Oh, I'm sure. There has been a big upheaval against Common Core education, mainly because of the national standardization and the ridiculous methods in which they teach math. However, I'm afraid many people don't see it for what it is. It is global collectivization. Some of the UN Agenda 21 stuff, this is called, they have tenets: a fair world, economic development, social progress, sustainable development, a viable world, a livable world, and environmental responsibility. In the original tenets, it was environmental justice and social justice, which is right out of Karl Marx. The United Nations believes it essential that education be standardized across the world in order to get everyone on board with Agenda 21, sustainable development. Truthfully, they won't have to convince anyone since the social sciences have mastered the arts of manipulating human behavior and made tremendous progress in learning how to indoctrinate people into a certain worldview. And they've been doing it since before my mother was born, by the way. The following is from the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization called UNESCO. Oh, God, Ron's talked about this. The UN Decade of Education for Sustainable Development between 2005 and 2014 seeks to mobilize the educational resources of the world to help create a more sustainable future. Many paths to sustainability, in other words, sustainable agriculture and forestry, research and technology, transfer, finance, sustainable production and consumption exist and are mentioned in the 40 chapters of Agenda 21, the official document of the 1992 Earth Summit that was in Rio. Education is one of these paths. Education alone cannot achieve a more sustainable future. However, without education and learning for sustainable development, we will not be able to reach that goal. Good, I hope the parents throw this crap out of their schools or take their kids out. There are a couple of important things to look at here. First, the very first sentence of the quote states that the United Nations seeks to mobilize the world's educational resources to create a more sustainable future. Not only were they successful in getting the majority of the United States universities on board, they also have President Obama calling for creation of a global education fund. While this was as early as 2008, I don't think many people realized the connection between Agenda 21, Common Core, and Obama's inclination towards world socialism. Well, I got news for you, folks. I've been getting this since 2008. I get it. To stress the significance of this further, I remind you of the collective national standardization of Common Core and ask you now to think of that on global terms. They are seeking to turn our children into automatons who believe we need government to save us from global warming. Another big lie. Second, if this isn't enough to convince you, let me direct you to another UN document concerning education. The Dakar Framework Education for All, Meeting Our Collective Commitments, clearly states on page 8, section 6, that education is the key to the successful implementation of sustainable development programs. Actually, they mean the indoctrination. Now here comes the really good part, so brace yourself. They also refer to education as a fundamental human right and that all people should have access to free education. It is not a fundamental right. It is a commodity and a good. You are allowed to pursue it and pay for it yourself. We all know that education is not a human right because it is not free. In order to have a free education, someone else has to pay for it. Yes. This is where the document, UN Conventions on the Rights of the Child, oh God, this is another one that gets me, comes into play. Liberals love this because they believe that it guarantees the rights of everyone to have a good education. However, it does weigh more than that. It puts all of the rights concerning education into the hands of the child and the government. Parents no longer have a say. That's what's going on in Europe. A free state-provided education is now a fundamental human right for young children, and parents can be held criminally liable for failing to provide it in some parts of the world. That would be England, I'm sure. This is significant when you consider that the next part of the Dakar framework. We hereby collectively commit ourselves to the attainment of the following goals: expanding and improving comprehensive early childhood care and education, especially for the most vulnerable and disadvantaged children. Ensuring that by 2015, all children, particularly girls, children in difficult circumstances, and those belonging to ethnic minorities have access to and complete free and compulsory primary education of good quality. One of the primary goals of Marxism is to take hold of children as early as possible and educate them into the ways of the state. Even here in America, the left tries to pass legislation that would put young children under the state's influence in programs like Head Start, which they've done. The left, having mastered the social sciences, believes that they can shape an individual into becoming anything they want. Of course, so did Stalin and Hitler. This is best illustrated in the film Agenda: Grinding America Down, when the narrator quotes Bertrand Russell, who believed free will could be driven out of an individual through education, through indoctrination, is my editorial on that. The quote is quite telling regarding the overall attitude of the left towards individuality. Here's the quote: "The social psychologist of the future will have a number of classes of school children on whom they will try different methods of producing an unshakable conviction that snow is black. It is clear by looking at the stated goals of the UN and the efforts of the United States schools and universities that there is an effort to retrain all of us into thinking we need government. The left is attempting to train us to believe that only the UN, set up as a global governing body, has the power and necessary resources to save humanity from ourselves." Oh, what Fabian socialists. This is an old model. If you still doubt this, please refer once again to the 45 goals of the communist takeover in America. Here is goal number 11: promote the UN as the only hope for mankind. If its charter is rewritten, demand that it be set up as a one-world government with its own independent armed forces. Oh, boy. We can ignore this, but I believe to do so is allow the left's agenda to come to fruition that much more quickly. Is that really what you want for America? So that was that particular one, and I thought it was good enough to read today. So, again, I'm at the place where I have 32 minutes, and if you cannot call in, I'm going to go ahead and close the show. I didn't want to bore you with reading too much, but this is what's going on, and it has been going on for a long time. California is just overflowing with Agenda 21, Common Core. I think it was 5 or 6 years ago when they implemented the K-12. Okay, sorry, Mike. I know. I get it. So I'm going to have to cut this one short. But next time, I hope Ron comes in and others come in, and we're praying for Bill, too. But they had their, I think it was at least 5 or 6 years ago, that the state of California has a state law that all the education, kindergarten through 12th grade, they are forced to teach LGBT training, which comes right out of Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, that perverted, deviant behavior should be viewed as normal. Oh, good. Thanks, Mikey. Let's tune into Mikey B tomorrow. I don't think Terry Rowland's doing a show, but I know that Mikey B is going to be on at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, and 6 p.m. my time. Higher Truth Radio, you guys got to tune in if you can. He's going to address some of these things that I've been talking about today. California is doomed. We're going to have 20 cents a gallon more gas tax in 2015, and by 2017, it'll probably be another 50 cents added on top of that. So anyone who still thinks that they want to live in this damn state, I'm telling you, they've got to have their head examined. Last night, I was talking to Sue because we've had so many meetings. We go through all this stuff. There's a meeting tonight. People are trying to go against city council, the current majority. What's happening in our state, she told many of her clients, she says, once her obligations are done here, that means her friend who's 99 years old, when she passes away, that woman is bailing out of Dodge, and before Myrtle passes away, I'm going to Indiana. So that's it in a nutshell. Shell, I just want to thank you guys. I can't play any music because I don't even know how to do it. They won't let me scroll down on my... there it is. It is hard to see. Lonnie, I think I've got it. It's a pain in the backside. So I'm going to do a little bit of Living in America. Thank you so much, Lonnie. And I want to thank Mikey B, Lonnie, Yola, Nick, and whoever was in the chat room prior. And we will see Mikey tomorrow. And God bless Bill and everybody in Patriot Families and all y'all. And we'll just keep fighting. We'll just keep fighting. God bless you guys. Love you. Be blessed. See you tomorrow night.